Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Jane Hamden. The Milwaukee music scene is rife with local bands playing rock, jazz, and rhythm and blues. But even the most knowledgeable local music fans may not be familiar with a group that is generating buzz in the electronic music world. Cyber Chump is the group's name, the two members making fun of themselves for their limited grasp on the technology that's such a big part of their music. The style is known as ambient or techno. Cyberchump is Jim Steele, who lives in Kansas City, and Mark G.E. of Milwaukee. He tells Lake Effect's Dan Harmon all about Cyberchump.
We think of our music as electro-organic music, which is sort of looking at a mixture of both electronic music, mixing it in with organic instruments. So we might have somebody actually playing a violin or a saxophone, or we're playing, you know, bass, keyboard, guitar, that sort of thing. But in addition, we're mixing in things that are electronic, are loop-based, and we're tweaking things. So because nowadays with the software, you can play a guitar, and then you can switch it and turn it around and make it sound like any instrument you want. You can change the key that it's in. You can change how fast it is, how slow it is, the sonic quality to it. And so that's why we started to move more toward, there were kind of two things we were saying we were doing. One is composting. We're sort of doing oral composting, which is sort of taking our old stuff and then re-moving it around into new things and changing it. But the other thing is what we've started to come across as saying that it's oral sculpture. So we're actually, you know, taking the sonic elements of a song and then sculpting them in. And you can do that and compose the music that way. But you can also just take sounds and change those sounds.
I've always been amazed by the process of composing, and it seems like this would be, because I don't think it's a very straightforward process, but it seems like this would be even less so just because you have so many options available to you just because of the instruments that you use. You can use both electronic, which can create any sound you want, and then you're using acoustical instruments as well, and you can manipulate that as well. So how do you start even the process of designing, if you will, a piece of music? I mean, or does that change continually as you're working on it?
It changes completely with every song. Jim and I don't use the same palette for any two songs. So what we do is, for every song, we start completely fresh. You know, typically with a band, you'd say, well, I play the keyboards, or I play the guitar, or I'm the lead singer. And in our music, we really start coming out with sounds. That's really where we start. It's sort of a palette of sounds. And so one of us might come up with an idea for how to create a sound. Like we might say, oh, here's a sound that we could make if we used a stenography machine and we slowed down the piano quite a bit and then pumped that in to the computer and altered it and added some reverb to it. And that sound will inspire us. And from there, then we'll start to write things. Or we might take a keyboard and add a lot of decay to it. Or we might say something like, here's a horn that one person played. Let's flip it backwards and then add some decay and see what that sounds like. And from there, it might inspire you then to start playing piano to it or something like that. So it's with every song, the palette is completely different.
Do you have a melody in your mind first? But then a lot of this music is not melody-driven. I mean, there are melodies within. It's like melody pods, you know, part of it has a melody and then it drifts away from that into something else and then the melody comes back. So how do you work in all these melodies?
It's fragments of melody. I mean, we tend to, you know, I think Jim tends to be a little bit more melodic than I am. I tend to spend a lot more time thinking about the rhythm and the beats. And, you know, this is sort of like an argument that we go back and forth on. People will say, oh, well, you tend to be more the rhythm guy and you tend to be more the melody guy. And we both do a lot of it. We change it up. And in some odd way, there's this Cyberchump thread that goes through everything. If you took all five discs and played them kind of out of order randomly in a CD player, it all works together. But nothing really sounds like anything because we've changed completely and we've started it completely and ended it completely. We have different musicians on every song. There's sort of a core of us that are working on these things, and there's, I guess in that respect, there's sort of a similar approach and attitude, but we really work hard to go against all of that. And when you're talking about, like, how do you label this kind of music, what is it? You know, that's a real yin and yang sort of argument as an artist. In one way, we really fight being able to be labeled. On the other hand, if you're going to get anywhere and have anybody hear your music, you've got to choose something. That's what we found. And so Jim and I kind of go back and forth about, you know, we're not going to make music for a certain genre. We're going to release music and say, after we've done the music, well, okay, who might like this? Where would it fit? Where's the audience for this? And how can we get this music out to that audience?
And we're going to listen to three of your musical compositions in a moment. I want to find out first, though, about your musical partner, Jim, who apparently does not even live in the same city. You guys coordinate via any vehicle except being in the same room together.
That's right. Like. Jim and Jim lives in Kansas City. I live in Milwaukee. And we met back in Kansas City in the 80s when I was going to graduate school. And at that time, really didn't do music together. Then I moved back to Milwaukee and started my practice here. And it somehow blossomed, especially with the internet, because Jim and I don't really do any music together in the same room for the most part. One of us starts in almost every album, about half of them are started by one of us. You know, he'll start half of them and I'll start the other half usually. We try to just come up with ideas and start them and then send them off. So I might do a keyboard part with a bass part, let's say, an idea with some fragment, and then leave it very open-ended. I send it to him with an email. What do you think about this? Don't give him any direction. And he does the same with me. We're just very open about, you know, you trust your partner in regards to what they're going to do. And so we give the other person no direction, and then the other person just sort of adds what they think fits and what works and sends it back. And then we just bounce like that, ping-pong back and forth through the email, sending files, FTPing files back and forth to each other.
All right. Well, without much further ado, I want to play some music from you. And the first is one of my favorites, I have to say, and that is the song The Charmer, and this is off of Scientists in the Trees. And I have to listen to it now thinking, how did you guys compose this song without actually being even in the same city? Because there's so many little parts to this song. Maybe you can just set it up for us, and then we'll play a little bit.
Well, you know, this is a good example of a couple things that we do. One, I think we have very driving music, you know, music that's good to drive and also just has a forward motion all the time, a lot of rhythm, a lot of rhythmic elements in it. And that's usually how we'll start. I mean, I will many times start on a song like that with just kind of writing a drum track and doing some kind of rhythm. And then we add melody afterwards. So that's, for the most part, that I think is a good example of that. Also, this song, I think, has a lot of world music elements in it. And, you know, once you start to piece it together, then usually you find something that works. And you might say, let's pull somebody in who plays the flute or, you know, and many times we don't even direct what they do. We'll a lot of times just pick people that we know we like what they do, and they'll just have the right sensibility for what we're doing.
That was The Charmer, and there are a lot of pieces to that song. I have to wonder how you and Jim went back and forth on that and how you got a song that flows out of going back and forth for months.
Well, I mean, you're listening to the song, so we've always, even when we do end up in the studio, sometimes once in a while we'll get together and we'll mix things together. We've always tended to not talk a lot anyway. We just play. So I think talking about music, you know, doesn't really get you anywhere. I mean, because usually Jim and I will completely disagree. So if we start talking, we end up in an argument anyhow. So what we tend to do is just do the music. And the music really, the song will guide you. I mean, if you just trust in what you hear.
Mark G.E. is half of the electronic music group Cyber Chump. We'll have more of his conversation with Dan Harmon after a short break. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. Back now with more of Lake Effect. I'm Jane Hamden. Dan Harmon continues his conversation with Mark G.E. of the electronic music group Cyber Chump. It's difficult to define the group's sound. One listener's relaxation music, maybe another's dance tune, Mark G.E. explains.
That's what makes it hard to categorize what we do, and one of the things that I like about it, that you can't say this music is just for this. Now, that can make it very difficult in terms of, you know, you need to peg music, unfortunately, in order to get it to an audience, because people, if they don't know what it is. And the other thing I find that's interesting is our music is like, we tend to have that old attitude like Pink Floyd had, where we're going to take you on a trip from the beginning to the end with our album and listen to the whole album. And it changes up, and there's high points and low points and fast points and slow points. Most people nowadays don't do that. They, you know, you get 10 songs on an album and they're all, everything sounds very similar, and they're all very, very much the same. They just maybe have different melodies. And we tend not to take that approach, because we want to entertain you through a journey. So we do music, you know, that I would say is perfect for falling asleep at night, and then music that's great for dancing or driving to. And I can't see how we'd want to limit that. I don't think we could.
Well, I want to play another song from Secrets to Tell You, and this, you said this song has received a lot of airplay, especially on NPR. This might be a song that people would know if they're into electronica, and this is Secrets to Tell You. Why do you think that song has received so much attention?
Well, I think, again, it has a lot of the elements that are sort of like the world music elements as well as electronica elements. I think it's just a very catchy sort of song. And there's a mysterious quality. My massage therapist was singing into my back one day, and I thought it was amazing. I mean, you could feel her voice resonating against my back. And the feeling was incredible, but the sound was incredible. And I said to her, and she was over at our house doing massage, and I said, can you come upstairs to the studio and let me record you doing that exact same thing into a microphone? And then we decided it just fit this song perfectly, because there's sort of a mysterious quality to what she's doing. It's sort of also a healing, loving quality to what she's doing.
Okay, and this is from the title track from Secrets to Tell You.
Thank you.
that was Secrets to Tell You, and as you said, it is same group, different sound.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we go for. I mean, I don't know if we would have, I don't think we'd have any interest in doing a whole album of the same thing with the same palette. You know, we just naturally approach it that we pick up completely different instruments for every song.
And you said that your, not only was your massage therapist an inspiration for this song, but she's actually, her voice is in there along with you and your wife.
That's right.
Yeah. Because it's electronic music, so a lot of it does not have voices in it. So how do you incorporate that in there without it turning into another category, if you will?
Well, yeah, in that song, I think it's just enhancing it like another instrument. If we do add voices, they're usually not lyrics. I mean, she's singing something. I have no idea what it is. But, you know, what's interesting about it is when we recorded that part of the vocals, there was no song. She recorded that before we recorded the song. And when we recorded the song, then I thought, oh, you know, let's see if her vocals would fit in here. And it was amazing. I just took a snippet out. I had about 3 minutes of her singing. I took a 15-second snippet out, and I stuck it in the song, didn't alter it, didn't change the key, and it fit perfect.
And the song brought up an issue that you and I have discussed a little bit, and then here in the radio world, we discuss it frequently, and that is how things sound on different speakers. I mean, like if I'm editing something at my desk and then I hear it later at home on my speakers, it sounds different. And it's very difficult to anticipate how things are going to sound on various sound systems. And some stuff will get washed out and you'll never hear it. And that could be an important part of a song that you think should be audible on all speakers. And then other speakers, you'll hear something as well. So how do you incorporate that into your compositions? And which I'm sure is further complicated by the fact that you guys don't live in the same city.
That is a good point. It's very challenging. A lot of times people would think that when you're recording an album of music, that the recording, composing and recording would be the main part of what you do. But more and more with Jim, the mixing is more of what we do. Meaning, we might spend 6 months or 8 months putting down tracks and playing all the instruments and all of that. But more and more, we're taking at least that much time. We finished recording on this album probably 8 months ago, and on this next album, Sankara. And we have spent at least 8 months trying to mix it down. And then what we do is we do a rough mix, and we'll tend to listen to it on everything. Both of us will listen to it in our cars, which sound completely different than one another. And we'll listen to it on boomboxes all around the house. We'll start to listen to it on our home stereos, all the different home stereos. And lately, I've been listening to it an awful lot on my iPod. And I found that with our new album, there were hisses and glitches and little electronic fragments that I had never heard before. And I'm afraid to go back and listen to our earlier albums now because I'm afraid I'm going to hear all of these kind of artifacts that'll drive me crazy. But our new album, the earbuds that I have for my iPod, there's a frequency there that's completely different than what you would hear on a large stereo. So in doing that, we've had to really take that into consideration, especially with electronica. A lot of our music, especially being sold on eMusic or iTunes, we know that they're going to be listening to this music on their iPod or something similar. And so when you mix it, you want to make sure that there's not going to be some hiss or some artifact that you've never heard because you listen to it on your monitors all the time.
Your latest album is Sankara, and we're going to play a track on the way out, I'm sad to say, but what is it we're going to listen to, and when is this coming out?
This song is called On the Ice, and this music is fairly beatless and much more, I would say, sound-based, you know, in terms of oral sculpture and doing soundscapes. This is the kind of music to probably meditate and contemplate to, and perhaps even to fall asleep to or to wake up in the morning to. Every couple albums, Jim and I like to try to get away from the beats and still try to make sort of a rhythmic, mellower soundscape album in which we're experimenting with sounds. And that's what Sankara is. And Sankara really is we felt, I guess, overwhelmed by a lot of things in life and just felt like we were going to do an album about the whole enchilada, you know, about Earth being born and growing and man or woman, you know, humans coming up from the muck, as well as our own lives. There's a change here because there's a lot more, I think there's always a dark edge to what we do, but there's also a lot of beauty to what we're trying to do. And some of that has happened in this newer album. Jim and I, one of the things that Jim mentions is that I had a son 2.5 years ago. And he really says that he sees that that changed how I started writing music, that I'm writing a lot more sort of pretty songs, whereas I used to write a lot more dirgy kind of songs. So it's, you know, again, I think a reflection of maybe some directions our lives are taking in the band.
And the track we're going to hear is called On the Ice. And Mark, I thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Mark G.E. of Milwaukee is a member of the electronic music group Cyberchump. He spoke with Dan Harmon. Jim Skeel is the other half of Cyberchump. He lives in Kansas City. The song we're hearing now is called On the Ice. It's from Cyberchump's latest CD, Sankara. This is Lake Effect on WUWM